Continuing our class of individuals that not the biggest part of any individual book is written about, but they are no less influential. In fact, tonight I would suggest that this guy's influence is very outsized, unfortunately, to the not-so-good part. All right, so what point in time are we talking about with Jeroboam here in the time of Israel's history?
Divided kingdom.
Very start of the divided kingdom. So, starting off then, it's actually at the end of Solomon's reign. And at this point in time, Israel is at its greatest extent of territory in history. Somebody could read, Zach, could you read Deuteronomy 12, verse 24? Earl, could I get you to read Joshua 1, verses 4 when he's done? And Mr. Master, could I get you to read 1 Kings 4, 20 through 21? Yeah. 1 Kings 4, 20 through 21, when Earl's done with his. Zach, you got it? Yeah, I think. Nope. No, didn't type in the right one. All right, let's start Joshua 1, 4.
Okay. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, even as far as the great river, the Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and as far as the great sea toward the setting of the sun, will be your territory.
All right.
I think you want 11:24.
11:24, okay. Try 11:24.
Awesome. Every place on which the sole of your foot treads shall be yours. Your territory shall be from the wilderness to the Lebanon, and from the river Euphrates, to the western sea.
Judah and Israel were as numerous as the sand by the sea in multitude, eating and drinking and rejoicing. So Solomon reigned over all kingdoms, from the river to the land of the Philistines, as far as the border of Egypt. They brought tribute and served Solomon all the days of his life.
All right, so is it reign of Solomon that Israel extends out to the fullest part of the promised land that God had promised, all the way from Egypt up to the Euphrates River? Actually, some of your more, I can't remember if they're the Orthodox Jewish people or another group of the Jews, think that Israel's establishment was because Israel never reigned to the Euphrates River, but here we see that Israel did reign to the Euphrates River, just not for a very long period of time, because of what happens next. All right, so King Solomon. King Solomon, during his reign, how many wives did the guy have?
700 wives and 300 concubines.
1 Kings chapter 11. All right, so what was the problem with these wives? In verse 3, we see he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines. And what happened with the wives? What did they do?
Returned his heart away from God.
That is correct. Daryl, could I get you to read 1 Kings 11, starting in verse 3, running down through running through 12. Actually, just running through 13.
And he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned his heart away. For it came about when Solomon was old, his wives turned his heart away to his other gods, and his heart was not wholly devoted to the Lord his God as the heart of David his father had been. For Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the detestable idol of the Ammonites. And Solomon did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and did not follow the Lord fully as David his father had done. Then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the detestable idol of Moab, on the mountain which is east of Jerusalem, and from Molech to detest Belial of the sons of Ammon. Thus also he did for all his foreign wives who burned incense and sacrificed to their gods. Now the Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart was turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice, and had commanded him concerning this thing that he should not go after other gods. But he did not observe what the Lord had commanded. So the Lord said to Solomon, because you have done this, and you have not kept my covenant and my statutes, which I have commanded you, I will surely tear the kingdom from you and will give it to your servant. Nevertheless, I will not do it in your days for the sake of your father David, but I will tear it out of the hand of your son. However, I will not tear away all the kingdom, but I will give one tribe to your son for the sake of my servant David, and for the sake of Jerusalem, which I have chosen.
All right. So, we're at the end of the United Kingdom here. And what does God say he's going to do because of his disobedience? All of it? All but one tribe. All right, so in the days of Solomon, he raises up adversaries to Solomon. In 1 Kings 11, 14 through 25, could I get you to read that for me, please?
14 through 25?
Yeah.
Then the Lord raised up an adversary to Solomon, Hadad the Edomite. He was of the royal line in Edom, for it came about when David was in Edom, and Joab, the commander of the army, had gone up to bury the slain, and had struck down every male in Edom. For Joab and all Israel stayed there 6 months until he had cut off every male in Edom. Then Hadad fled to Egypt, he and certain Edomites of his father's servants, with him, while Hadad was a young boy. And they arose from Midian and came to Paran, and they took men with them from Paran and came to Egypt to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, who gave him a house and assigned him food and gave him land. I need to keep going. 20, he said 20. Now Hadad found great favor before Pharaoh, so that he gave him in marriage the sister of his own wife, the sister of Taphanes, the queen. And the sister of Taphanes bore his son Genubath, whom Taphanes weaned in Pharaoh's house. And Genubath was in Pharaoh's house among the sons of Pharaoh. But when Hadad heard in Egypt that David slept with his fathers, and that Joab, the commander of the army, was dead, Hadad said to Pharaoh, send me away that I might go to my own country. Then Pharaoh said to him, but what have you lacked with me, that behold, you are seeking to go to your own country? And he answered, nothing. Nevertheless, you must surely let me go. God also raised up another adversary to him, Rezin, the son of Eliada, who had fled from his lord, Hadadezer, king of Zobah. And he gathered men to himself and became leader of a marauding band after David slew them of Zobah. And they went to Damascus and stayed there and reigned in Damascus. So he was an adversary to Israel all the days of Solomon, along with the evil that Hadad did, and he abhorred Israel and reigned over Aram.
All right, so it's trouble in the kingdom. So Solomon reigned from border of Egypt to the river, but this guy is ruling in Damascus, which is right about in here. So what is that going to do to the part of his kingdom up here? I'm going to start cutting it off. What other country of note is there in this chapter that's an adversary to Solomon? Edom. And Solomon's first foreign wife, who is she?
Daughter of Pharaoh. Who is she?
Daughter of Pharaoh. Who's given the Edomite his refuge? Pharaoh. So Solomon's gaining enemies all the way around him, either subtly or outright. But then comes the greatest threat to Solomon's reign. Starting in verse 26 and run to the end of the chapter. Who's be willing to read 26 through 43?
Then Solomon's servant Jeroboam, son of Nebat, an Ephraimite from Zerida, whose mother's name was Zeruah, a widow, also rebelled against the king. And this is what caused him to rebel against the king. Solomon had built the name of Milo and repaired the damage to the city of David, his father. The man Jeroboam was a mighty man of valor, and Solomon, seeing that the young man was industrious, made him the officer over all the labor force of the house of Joseph. Now it happened at that time, when Jeroboam went out to Jerusalem, that the prophet Ahijah, the Shilonite, met him on the way, and he had clothed himself with a new garment, and the two were alone in the field. Then Ahijah took hold of the new garment that was on him and tore it into 12 pieces. And he said to Jeroboam, take for yourself 10 pieces, for this is the Lord, the God of Israel. Behold, I will tear the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon and will give 10 tribes to you, but he shall have one tribe for the sake of my servant David, and for the sake of Jerusalem, the city which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel, because they have forsaken me and worshipped Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, Chemosh, the god of the Moabites, Milcom, the god of the people of Ammon, and have not walked in my ways, to do what is right in my eyes, and keep my statutes and my judgments, as did his father David. However, I will not take the whole kingdom out of his hand, because I have made him ruler all the days of his life for the sake of my servant David, whom I chose because he kept my commandments and my statutes. But I will take the kingdom out of his son's hand and give it to you, 10 tribes, and to all your heart's desires, and you shall be king over Israel. Then it shall be, if you heed all that I command you, walk in my ways and do what is right in my sight, to keep my statutes and my commandments, as my servant David did, then I will be with you and build for you an enduring house as I built for David, and will give Israel to you. And I will afflict the descendants of David because of this, but not forever. Solomon therefore sought to kill Jeroboam. Jeroboam arose and fled to Egypt. So Shishak, king of Egypt, and was in Egypt until the death of Solomon. Now the rest of the acts of Solomon, all that he did, and his wisdom, are they not written in the book of the acts of Solomon? Period that Solomon reigned in Jerusalem over all Israel 7 years. Then Solomon rested with his fathers and was buried in the city of David, his father. Rehoboam, his son, reigned in his place.
All right. So Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. What tribe was he from? And who is Ephraim?
Son of Joseph. Son of Joseph.
So, what here is said about Jeroboam? Anything in particular strike him?
Man of standing, he was a man of standing. In other words, that's a positive thing that's said about him, actually.
God gave him every opportunity to succeed, really.
God gave him every opportunity to succeed and had 10 pieces of the kingdom. What got Solomon to see him?
He was industrious.
In fact, that's about the only good thing that the Bible says about the man, which is, could probably be made a sermon sometime about it. The only good thing they can say about you is you are good at your job. It doesn't say much about you.
It's also a valiant warrior,
also in the same sentence. He is mentioned around 100 times throughout the whole Testament. So he said he's an Ephraimite, mighty man of valor and industrious. Where is he run?
Egypt.
Runs to Egypt. Now there's a pattern here about Egypt.
I think they were good frenemies, weren't they?
So good frenemies that they're going to show up to loot Solomon's plunder about 5 years after he's dead. All right, Solomon dies.
and Jeroboam returns. So in 1 Kings chapter 12, Olivia, would you mind reading 12, 1 through 11, please?
Yeah, 1 through 11.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Rehoboam went to Shechem, for all Israel had gone to Shechem to make him king. So it happened when Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, heard it. He was still in Egypt, for he had fled from the presence of King Solomon and had been dwelling in Egypt, that they sent and called him. Then Jeroboam and the whole assembly of Israel came and spoke to Rehoboam, saying, "Your father made our yoke heavy. Now therefore lighten the burdensome service of your father and his heavy yoke which he put on us, and we will serve you." So he said to them, "Depart for 3 days, then come back to me." And the people departed. Then King Rehoboam consulted the elders who stood before his father, King Solomon, while he still lived, and he said, "How do you advise me to answer these people?" And they spoke to him, saying, "If you will be a servant to these people today, and serve them, and answer them, and speak good words to them, then they will be your servants forever." But he rejected the advice which the elders had given him, and consulted the young men who had grown up with him, who stood before him. And he said to them, "What advice do you give? How should we answer this people who have spoken to me, saying, 'Lighten the yoke which your father put on us'?" Then the young men who had grown up with him spoke to him, saying, "Thus you should speak to this people who have spoken to you, saying, 'Your father made our yoke heavy, but you make it lighter on us.' Thus you shall say to them, 'My little finger shall be thicker than my father's waist. And now, whereas my father put a heavy yoke on you, I will add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scourges.'"
All right. So Rehoboam goes to Shechem, where he's going to be coronated as king of Israel. But the people want something. What is that?
Burden light.
They want some tax relief. Solomon's the richest guy in the world, and he's still taxing them like crazy. Not only that, but he's also having them do work service every few months. And they're like, "Okay, can we lighten up on this a bit?" So Solomon goes to the advisors of his dad. What did they say?
Lighten up.
What did the young guy say?
Time to prove yourself.
Act of strength. Show yourself. Yeah. So.
Interesting. It was wise for him to consult the elders, but he never asked God what to do.
No, he didn't. Although I could question whether it would have mattered either way, given that it's already foretold that he's going to lose it. So, he asked for 3 days. Why do you think he asked for 3 days? Do you think it took that long to gather everybody, his groups, the two groups together to ask him this? Especially since all Israel's already here? Or do you think he's wishy-washy enough that it took him that long to decide between the two?
Or is he just asking for enough time to make sure that he thinks enough for us?
Could be. But he thinks about it and it goes the wrong way. Let's see here. Mr. Conies, could you read 12 through 17? Actually, go to 19.
3 days later, Jeroboam and all the people returned to Rehoboam as the king had said, "Come back to me in 3 days." The king answered the people harshly, rejecting the advice given him by the elders. He followed the advice of the young men and said, "My father made your yoke heavy. I will make it even heavier. My father scourged you with whips. I will scourge you with scorpions." So the king did not listen to the people, for this turn of events was from the Lord, to fulfill the word the Lord had spoken to Jeroboam, son of Nebat, through Ahijah the Shilonite. When all Israel saw that the king refused to listen to them, they answered the king, What share do we have in David? What part in Jesse's son? To your tents, Israel. Look after your house, David. So the Israelites went home. But as for the Israelites who were living in the towns of Judah, Rehoboam still ruled over them. King Rehoboam sent out Adoniram, who was in charge of forced labor. But all Israel stoned him to death. King Rehoboam, however, managed to get into his chariot and escape to Jerusalem. So Israel had been in rebellion against the house of David to this day.
So he listens to the advice of the young whippersnappers, and what's the response?
Bad advice.
Bad advice, and what does Israel say to him?
And not me. They seceded from the Union.
To your tents, O Israel. Where have we heard that before? We have no share in David. That is correct. And that's in 2 Samuel 20, verse 1, if you grab that real quick. Yes, please.
Now there happened to be a worthless man whose name was Sheba, son of Bichri, a Benjamite. He blew the trumpet and said, "We have no portion in David, and we have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. Every man to his tents."
What passage was that?
2 Samuel 20, verse 1. This is right after the rebellion of Absalom. So, Rehoboam and his usual wise decisions in this chapter decides to try to patch things up. He's going to send out the head of the tax service out to see if he can get this straight. Yeah, that don't go so well. What did they do to him?
Stoned him.
They stoned him. So Rehoboam flees Judea. He tries to call out an army against them, but the prophet of God comes up and tells him to stop and go home. And he does the first smart thing in the whole chapter and listens. But since we're a little short on time, we won't cover that. All right. So Jeroboam now has... There we go. The northern part of the kingdom of Israel is now his. And so, in 1 Kings 12, 25, just 25, someone, Jeroboam, can I get you to read verse 25?
Then Jeroboam built Shechem in the hill country of Ephraim and lived there, and he went out from there and built Penuel.
All right, he's out there building cities. Sounds like everything's going okay, but what happens?
He starts thinking to himself, well, if people go back to Jerusalem to worship, they're going to turn away from me and go back to Rehoboam. Mm-hmm. So he builds some high places and two golden calves, so they'll stay in the northern kingdom regions and worship there.
Where does he build them?
Samaria. Yeah. One in Bethel and one in Dan.
One in Bethel and one in Dan. And what'd you say they were?
They were golden calves.
That ring a bell? Where have we heard that story before? Mount Sinai. Where did they just come from? Where had they just come from?
Egypt.
Where has Jeroboam just come from? Difficult to pin down the identity of this golden calf, but there are 1,400 gods in the Egyptian pantheon, many of them representing livestock, including golden calves, the biggest ones that most scholars think that they were modeled off of, whether Hathor, Apis, or Ptah, are commonly thought to be either the gods that they worship or were inspired by them. So as we can see, once again, Egypt's the downfall of Israel in part. All right. So this is totally not what the prophet told Jeroboam to do, is it?
What did the prophet tell him?
Honor me and honor God, and I'll make your family great throughout the generations.
So in a few years, he's over here building golden calves. So God tries to warn him off. Chapter 13. If I could have Zach, could you read 1-10 of chapter 13?
And behold, a man of God came out of Judah by the word of the Lord to Bethel. Jeroboam was standing by the altar to make offerings. And the man cried out against the altar by the word of the Lord and said, O altar, altar, thus says the Lord, behold, a son shall be born to the house of David, Josiah by name, and he shall sacrifice on you the priests of the high places who make offerings on you, and human bones shall be burned on you. And he gave a sign the same day, saying, this is the sign that the Lord has spoken. Behold, the altar shall be torn down, and the ashes that are on it shall be poured out. And when the king heard the saying of the man of God, which he cried against the altar at Bethel, Jeroboam stretched out his hand from the altar, saying, seize him. And his hand, which he stretched out against him, dried up, so that he could not draw it back to himself. The altar also was torn down, and the ashes poured out from the altar, according to the sign that the man of God had given by the word of the Lord. And the king said to the man of God, entreat now the favor of the Lord your God, and pray for me, that my hand may be restored to me. And the man of God entreated the Lord, and the king's hand was restored to him, and became as it was before. And the king said to the man of God, come home with me and refresh yourself, and I will give you a reward. And the man of God said to the king, if you give me half your house, I will not go in with you. And I will not eat bread or drink water in this place, for so it was commanded me by the word of the Lord, saying, you shall neither eat bread nor drink water, nor return by the way that you came. So he went another way, and did not return by the way that he came to Bethel.
Alright, so just as with the kings of Judah later and the kings of Israel, God doesn't just let him wander into this without at least giving a warning. So he's giving a warning here. What does he say?
He's saying that that altar is going to be, they're going to sacrifice the priests of those false religions, and they're probably going to be burned there.
And who's going to do that?
The king that will be born in Josiah.
Of the house of David.
Yeah.
So David, who the kingdom was split and given to him, a king of David's line is going to come up there and burn one of Jeroboam's greatest feats. Highly exclamation mark in that quote. And this does happen towards the end of the Judean kingdom, about less than 30 some odd years before they themselves are dragged into Babylonian captivity. So Jeroboam is present when the prophet gets there. What happens? What signs are he given that this is truly going to come to pass?
His hand.
His hand withers up.
And then the altar.
And then the altar splits. So, for the first and only time that we see, what does Jeroboam do?
Backs down.
He backs down and begs for mercy.
Yes, he says, ask the Lord your God.
He does say that.
He doesn't say, ask the Lord my God. In verse
6.
Yeah. The king answered and said to the man of God, please entreat the favor of the Lord your God and pray for me that my anger will be restored to me.
Which can tell you that Jeroboam has gone down this road perhaps a little too far. Don't know when he got there, whether he went there in Egypt or where he did it afterwards, hard to say. Doesn't really give enough information on that matter. And then he tries to bring in the man of God to his house. But what does he do?
Can't do it.
In the interest of time, we're going to skip over the account of the man of God, the old prophet of Bethel. But briefly, can someone summarize what happened there?
If I have it correct, the prophet that spoke to Jeroboam was told, you just go on home, don't go anywhere, just get straight home. And of course, when Jeroboam asked him to stay or whoever was there, he refused. But then this old prophet asked him to turn aside, and he listened to the old prophet, disobeying God's command. Kind of challenging thing to work out anyway, so I'd skip it if I were you too.
That is one of the strangest accounts in the Bible, because we have no idea what his motivations were. Does it really tell us for what happens? You said he came back, and then what happens?
Was he by a lion or something?
He was, or mauled by a lion. So, after this event, starting at verse 33, Jeroboam did not turn from his evil way, but again he made priests from every class of people, from the high places, whoever he wished, he consecrated him, and he became one of the priests of the high places. And this thing was a sin of the house of Jeroboam, so as to exterminate and destroy it from the face of the earth. Hard to say, especially with what he told the prophet back in the verse 6, as to whether he had any intention to turn around or whether the death of the prophet had any, because he didn't listen, had any motivation for him not to turn. Not a whole lot. I don't know if we can do more than speculate on that part. But either way, he doesn't turn. So starting in 14, we see judgment starting to fall on the house of Jeroboam. Daryl, could you read 14, 1 through 17?
At that time, Abijah the son of Jeroboam became sick. And Jeroboam said to his wife, "Arise now and disguise yourself so that they may not know that you are the wife of Jeroboam, and go to Shiloh. Behold, Abijah the prophet is there who spoke concerning me that I would be king over this people. And take 10 loaves with you, some cakes, and a jar of honey, and go to him. He will tell you what will happen to the boy." And Jeroboam's wife did so, and arose and went to Shiloh, and came to the house of Abijah. Now Abijah could not see, for his eyes were dim because of his age. Now the Lord had said to Abijah, "Behold, the wife of Jeroboam is coming to inquire of you concerning her son, for he is sick. You shall say thus and thus to her, for it will be when she arrives that she will pretend to be another woman." And it came about when Abijah heard the sound of her feet coming in the doorway that he said, "Come in, wife of Jeroboam. Why do you pretend to be another woman? For I am sent to you with a harsh message. Go say to Jeroboam, thus says the Lord God of Israel, because I exalted you from among the people and made you leader over my people Israel, and tore the kingdom away from the house of David and gave it to you, yet you have not been like my servant David, who kept my commandments, and who followed me with all his heart, to do only that which was right in my sight. You also have done more evil than all who were before you, and have gone and made for yourself other gods, molten images to provoke you to anger, and cast me behind your back. Therefore, behold, I am bringing calamity on the house of Jeroboam, and will cut off from Jeroboam every male person, both bond and free in Israel, and I will make a clean sweep of the house of Jeroboam, as one sweeps away dung until it is all gone. In anyone belonging to Jeroboam who dies in the city, the dogs will eat, and he who dies in the field, the birds of the heavens will eat. Now you, arise, go to your house, and your feet enter the city, the child will die. And all Israel shall mourn for him and bury him, for he alone and Jeroboam's family shall come to the grave, because in him something good was found. Toward the Lord God of Israel and the house of Jeroboam. Moreover, the Lord will raise up for himself a king over Israel who shall cut off the house of Jeroboam this day and from now on. How far was?
Through
17.
Yeah.
For the Lord God will strike Israel as a reed is shaken in the water, and he will uproot Israel from this good land which he gave to their fathers, and will scatter them beyond the Euphrates River. Because they have made their Asherim, provoking the Lord to anger. And he will give up Israel on account of the sins of Jeroboam, which he committed, and with which he made Israel to sin. Then Jeroboam's wife arose and departed and came to Tirzah. As she was entering the threshold of the house, the child died. And all Israel buried him and mourned for him according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke through his servant, Ahijah the prophet.
All right, so we see the one time that Jeroboam sins and asks for God is on account of the fact that his child is sick. Anything we can take out of that? Do you think it was, but he praises it once again in a weird way. He doesn't say, go to the prophet and ask of God what will happen to him. He says, go to the prophet and he will tell you what will happen.
He doesn't send her to make a request on the child's behalf.
Mm-hmm.
Just find out what's going to happen.
Yeah. Which is strange also. So, prophet's old, blind. So God tells him she's coming, and what is the message that he gives?
It's interesting to me that that child is the only thing that the Lord said is good.
Mm-hmm.
And the only one that will be married.
It is. I was getting there. He dies. Too, which is also an interesting thing. He's the only thing good in the house of Jeroboam, yet he dies. Is that as we saw with David? Death isn't always a punishment to the person that gets killed.
It's merciful in this particular case.
Yep. All right, so that's the first pass. We got to hurry it up. All right, so Jeroboam goes to war with Judah in 2 Chronicles 13. Skip to the end. All right, so Zach, could you read 2 Chronicles 13, 18 through 20, please?
Thus the men of Israel were subdued at that time, and the men of Judah prevailed, because they relied on the Lord, the God of their fathers. And Abijah pursued Jeroboam and took cities from him, Bethel with its villages, and Jeshana with its villages, and Ephron with its villages. Jeroboam did not recover his power in the days of Abijah, and the Lord struck him down, and he died.
So, final result of this. Turning from God. gets killed.
He uses power in that.
Unfortunately, though, his legacy continued on, and almost every other of the 100 verses that the Bible tells throughout the Old Testament, can anybody quote the one thing that is always usually said?
They followed in the ways of their father Jeroboam and did evil in the sight of the Lord. It's something like that.
Sins of Jeroboam.
Or pray away. Sins of Jeroboam. In 1 Kings 15:25-30, Jeroboam's house was destroyed by the next king of Israel, who was also given the same palm as Jeroboam was, but like Jeroboam, walked against God and he successfully, basically into Assyrian captivity, have every house of Israel is destroyed because they do not follow the Lord their God. Unfortunately, in 2 Kings chapter 17, verse 21 through 22. Okay, I get you to read that real quick. 2 Kings 17:21-23.
When he had 20 Israel from the house of David, and made Jeroboam the son of Nebat king, Jeroboam drove Israel away from following the Lord and made them commit great sin. And the sons of Israel walked in all the sins of Jeroboam, which he did. They did not depart from them until the Lord removed Israel from his sight, as he spoke through all the servants, prophets. So Israel was carried away into exile from their own land to Assyria until this day.
So as the prophet prophesied back when she came in to inquire about the child, Jeroboam's ultimate legacy would be Israel getting carried away into Assyrian captivity. And that wraps up Jeroboam. Next week is Ahab. We're going to have to try to figure out how to condense all that information. It's even about half a book. So, anyway, Ahab next week.